Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. We are reassembling the super nerds once again. And as with us always is Justin Savegas.
Howdy, everyone.
And again, joining the table, it's the author of the Mike Tool Show. And you can find him, you know, at conventions all over the country. It's Mike Tool.
Gentlemen, behold!
See, I don't compete with that. I know not to.
Right, you guys are sort of competing for the lowest register, but I think Mike wins. and of course, co-host and producer of the Anime World Order podcast and writer for otakuusa.com and Otaku USA the magazine, both still in print. It's Daryl Surratt. Hey, Daryl.
Absolute zero. No.
I'm not getting any of these.
Now that we got that out of our system,
you lost
up?
Me. Anyway,
Harmageddon, Zach. You don't remember the fantastic?
I haven't seen it in a very long time.
I like to keep it that way.
The thing I remember most about Harmageddon is the woodland creatures flocking into what's his name and like hiding in his pockets and shit. That's what I remember.
After he lost his powers for the second time in the movie.
Yeah. Yep.
God, that movie is awful.
But so God, pretty. But so pretty. Thanks, Rintaro.
It's a particular version of pretty, I think. It's not
an interminable, torturous version of pretty.
Anyway, so this is going to be a little bit shorter because we're taping at a weird time and everyone's got shit to do. But we're going to get into Twitter here as quick as we can. But I did want to go around the table and you know, just see what everyone's been watching, get a little check-in, and get an update on what you've been enjoying lately. Let's go ahead and start with Justin on this one.
Well, I'm still watching Flowers of Evil. I'm up to speed on it currently, and still digging it. I still have no idea where it's going at this point. And yeah, this is probably going to be one of those where after it ends, I'm probably going to have to buy the manga to read the rest of it.
Yeah.
But not sure if you noticed this, but Apple just updated the Apple TV, and now there's a Crunchyroll app on there.
Yep,
sure is.
So yeah, I think I'm gonna have to start flooring it on my Crunchyroll consumption at this point. I need to catch up on like Attack on Titan and stuff. And I'm also finally watching Game of Thrones because apparently I need to if I'm going to stay relevant in today's world.
You're watching Game of Thrones.
I'm watching Game of Thrones.
I find that hard to believe.
Why? Why is that hard to believe?
Because it's soapy, junky.
It is both of those things, and so far I'm an episode and a half in, and I have to say the pilot episode had some of the jankiest green screen I'd seen in a long time. But I'm somehow still like I have a feeling I'm not impressed, but I have a feeling this will still be a problem.
No, it gets better as it goes. Obviously the effects budget, I mean, that was a pilot, so right. You know, obviously the effects budget gets bigger as the seasons go on, but I don't know. I mean, if you could just appreciate, you know, soapy garbage, then yeah, you're probably going to love it.
I'll probably watch it once and, you know, never need to again. But, yeah, I'm liking it so far. It's one of those shows that everyone is talking about. Like, literally, I was in a CrossFit competition last weekend and our team was called the Dire Wolves. And I had no idea what the hell that meant.
Thought it was just some Dungeons and Dragons random monster manual thing.
Well, I knew what it was, kind of what it was, but it's just like, what? This is clearly a pop culture reference I'm not getting, and I feel completely out of it and old. So I'm like, well, got to keep up with the kiddies, even if it means watching garbage.
Yeah, you can't ignore everything. Well, Game of Thrones is a lot of fun. You will get enjoyment out of it. It's a ton of fun to watch that show. Like, I love it. But I acknowledge that it's soapy trash. Like, it totally is.
Fair enough.
Interesting. And speaking of bad, you mentioned bad green screen. I just very briefly wanted to mention. Last night, for the first time, I watched the film Ultraviolet, starring Mila Jovovich.
I have a personal vendetta against that movie.
I just wanted to say, in terms of bad green screen, I've never seen worse in a professional
film. You completely broke up on me. What are we talking about?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Mike.
It was timed perfectly. It was amazing. It's like I watched the worst thing and it was blank.
Sorry,
ultraviolet.
Ultraviolet.
Holy crap.
Yeah. That has some of the worst compositing I've ever seen. Literally green bleeding through people's hair. I've never seen it before. I'm surprised that I hadn't seen it before, but you want to see some probably the worst green screen I've ever seen in a professional production? Ultraviolet, there's your answer.
Oh, yeah. Mila Jovovich with so much edge enhancement, it's hilarious.
Is it? I thought it's Jovovich. I always say Jovovich.
Is it Jovovich? I don't know.
I say the J.
You say the J? Yeah. Well, at any rate, all right, Justin, well, good luck in Game of Thrones. We'll check in with you on that as the weeks come. I'm very curious to think to hear what you think of that show.
If you hear sighing coming from the north.
Yeah, right. Mike, that's you next.
Well, I've been keeping up with a lot of shows on Crunchyroll that are running currently. Flowers of Evil is right up there at the top of the list. That's tremendous. That's one of my favorite things that I've been watching, you know, for the past couple of years, really. It's a very good story of just the alienation and dread that you feel in high school that some of us experienced. But I'm watching a lot of other stuff. I'm watching Valvrave, which is an incredibly fun tribute to all kinds of weird old Sunrise mecha shows, and it's incredibly goofy and facile, and it could fall apart at any second, and that's part of the fun. I'm sure it will. I'm sure the wheels are just about to come off.
I thought it was has, but all right, keep going.
That's what
not quite. It's getting there though. Gargantia started off as a really interesting kind of sci-fi fable, and that again, you know, has skidded for several episodes. Maybe it'll rescue itself. And I'm watching Attack on Titan. That's good stuff. It's so much easier to deal with than the manga, which is one of the most horribly drawn comics I've ever read. And you know, the show, it's one of those, it's good enough that even though I've read all of the published editions of manga from Kodansha and know what's going to happen in the next episode, I still want to see it. So that's very enjoyable. But you know, the show of the season, the show that everyone's talking about that we can't stop watching, it's got to be Sparrow's Hotel.
I'm really impressed that you discovered Sparrow's Hotel. That's like the testament to things that like prove that the Crunchyroll model works, because hey, you've already paid your $6 or $7. What the hell else is on
here? Sparrow's Hotel is all over in 3 minutes, and it's really just like I'm still not sure if it's just absolutely terrible or if it's some weird calculated move. It's like Tim and Eric, awesome anime, great job, and there's going to be some incredible payoff at the end of the season. In terms of regular TV, yeah, I've been watching The Thronies. I watched that since the beginning. That's great stuff, and I'm already mad that we have to wait another 9 months to get more. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I'm really looking forward to the beginning of July, because that's when we get Luther Series 3. Love that show.
Yeah. All right, then. Have not seen Luther.
Good show.
It rules. I'm pretty sure it's still on Netflix. It's very enjoyable.
Oh, cool. Have to check that out. Okay. Daryl, brings us to you.
All right. Well, I'm not really, you know, unique in the sense that I am totally caught up with Attack on Titan, which I am loving. But I am really glad that Crunchyroll has finally put up Didi Hokuto no Ken. This is the super deformed parody of Fist of the North Star, as done by Akitaro Daiichi. But he's finally, after all these years, learned to tone it back a bit. And so it's working out really well. It's incredibly dumb. Basically, the premise is, what if we took the characters of Fist of the North Star and there was no post-apocalyptic war? What do these people do with their lives? And the answer is be really dumb. And so it's a lot of good fun, incredibly stupid, also short, relatively speaking. I've got it mixed up. No, the old Didi Hokuto no Ken was short, but this one is on Crunchyroll. And you can check it out. And since you already paid your $6 or $7, you got nothing to lose. So, yeah, I'm watching those. In addition, I am actually checking out movies for anime, as in not franchise extensions of things, but actual standalone films. I just imported 009 Re-Cyborg, which is the updated Kenji Kamiyama retelling of Cyborg 009.
Oh, tell us about that. I'm curious.
I'm very envious. Yeah, let's hear it.
It's pretty damn good. I'll give it that. I mean, it's not... it's better than the Eden of the East movies,
Wow.
which is low hanging fruit. But
plus one,
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing about these films is that it's obviously, you know, the Cyborg 009 for a new generation kind of thing. It's not really a direct retelling of a previous story. It's sort of, you know, doing its own little thing while retaining enough elements of past 009 stuff updated for a modern era to make sense. I think it's really accessible if you've never seen the show. I know a lot of people, even for the Cartoon Network one in the early 2000s, thought the art style was a little divisive. Everyone now looks, you know, reasonably modern. You know, you don't really think of old 60s art when you look at this movie. So I think it works pretty good as just an action sort of superhero-ish kind of, you know, story. Certainly better than the last superhero movie most people saw in the theater.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit. So that's it for anime. Just a Hokuto no Ken.
Well, and Attack on Titan. I mean, I also, you know, saw a movie, you know, not recently, but you know, within the last few months, called Asura. Have any of you guys heard of this?
No,
sure haven't.
Yeah, actually, it's actually, I believe it was IG, but let me fake geek this and Google it as I'm talking to confirm that it is in fact. You know, that, but
Daryl,
no,
confirmed fake nerd.
Yeah. That's exactly how it works. No, but I just saw him, you know, the idea of it is, you know, it's a movie of the kind that you didn't think would be made anymore. It's like a period drama sort of thing in like feudal Japan. And, basically there's a kid who's got to, you know, survive on his own and basically like does all sorts of like terrifying things. And, you know, really cool art style to it. It's actually from the guy who made Tiger and Bunny, or directed it, Keiichi Sato. He also did Karas, which is the thing that only I like.
He is the true creator of the Big O.
That's right. Good catch there. Obviously, Mike Toole knows more about the Big O than I ever would. But it just fascinates me because it's a movie, like, you know, lush theatrical film. That came out, you know, it's not too long, maybe a little under an hour and a half, hour and change. And nobody's really even bothering to license it or, you know, pick it up or any of that stuff. But no, it's cool stuff. It's kind of like a period sort of horror kind of thing. So I do recommend it. It's just one of those things that you don't hear anybody talking about. And it's fascinating because Japan is still making movies, you know, in anime form for the theater. I just wish more of it would come out here. It's just that no one really knows what to do with this sort of stuff.
You know, aside from just license it and release it on DVD and Blu-ray.
Like, yeah, like you would with a regular movie.
Everything else, yeah. I don't know why that doesn't happen more often, but I don't know. It was brought up on Twitter recently that it's a weird shame that we don't know what's happening with that Dragon Ball.
Incredibly strange, because that's going to get pirated so much when that thing actually comes out in Japan in September, and it's just like, guys, you got to throw the West something, you know?
I think it's one of those things where Japan is just thinking, we don't want to have this thing be released in America and cannibalize our own sales, kind of like how we're only finally at some point this year getting the 10th One Piece movie, Strong World, which is fantastic, by the way. It's only because the 11th film, Film Z, is right about to come out in Blu-ray in Japan, which from what I hear, as good as Strong World was, Film Z blows it away, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's one of those frustrating things where I think a lot of these companies need to treat their properties like global brands, and they just don't.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Dragon Ball is a global brand. It's not just a Japan thing. Neither is One Piece. Dragon Ball especially, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, that film should have been like, you know, an Avengers-level event where the entire developed world got it within the space of a week in theaters, you know?
Should have been.
That's what should have happened.
So hard to do logistically, though. I mean,
oh, I know, I understand, but it's just like, but there's a payday there. Come on, you know, isn't there? Am I wrong? Dragon Ball, at least.
Wasn't there like IMAX involved in this new Dragon Ball too? Like, didn't they spend like some crazy money?
Yeah, that I don't know.
I could be wrong on that.
I don't know about that, but I know that if they had, you know, done what Mike was suggesting and released it in more than one territory, you know, they could have made, you know, probably a lot more money on that. It just
almost certainly.
Yeah, it made like $30 or $40 million in Japan, which is pretty goddamn great for a cartoon movie. But they probably could have gotten past $100 million worldwide on that thing.
I would probably say more than that. Like, I
could be much more, but yeah. I'm trying to be conservative here.
How long is it though? Is it a feature?
Oh yeah, it's like it's isn't it like 70 or 80 minutes?
Yeah, it's roughly that? You know, movie length for you know a cartoon.
So they probably could have hired a film booker, had Funimation do it, and probably released it in about you know 60 or 70 theaters here, made probably a good $500K minimum. That's with no effort at all.
And yeah, that's with zero effort. If they actually tried to market it, you know, maybe much more than that. But
all the effort they would need to do is say, "New Dragon Ball Z movie done."
Right. Right. Yeah. Interestingly, I noticed that Funimation is now doing a survey to determine whether or not people will continue buying that Funimation Dragon Ball Blu-ray remaster. I don't know what that says about the future of that property, but
I just feel like at some point everybody who wants to buy Dragon Ball Z has bought Dragon Ball Z.
at least once.
Yeah.
Possibly more than once.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to see. I'm curious whether or not, because this Dragon Ball movie thing, when I look at it, you know, sort of pulling back and saying, like, okay, aside from the sort of general kind of accepted knowledge that Dragon Ball is the biggest thing, if you pull back and you say, okay, so this movie didn't get any kind of simultaneous release, the Blu-ray re-release of the show proper got canceled because it wasn't making enough money. I'm wondering if, well, you know, train's pulling into the station, that shit's done. I'm kind of wondering. I mean, 30 or 40 million, that's great for Japan, but, you know, have they just sort of wrung every last thing they can out of this? I'm curious about that.
If they had, a good 20-plus year run on it.
It's true, yeah. That's very true. I don't know. I wonder if the bloom is off the rose on that one.
At this point, they're just regurgitating old plots. I mean, Dragon Ball GT was the last time they tried to make new original stories, and yikes.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of the appeal of this new movie is that Toriyama is actually involved in it, since they saw how much more successful One Piece Strong World was when they actually involved the original creator, Eiichiro Oda, with the creation of the film. It wasn't just your yearly Shonen Jump, let's put out a movie kind of thing. They actually planned it out for a couple of years, integrated it a little more into the comic side of things. And that's part of the deal with the new Dragon Ball, is that it ties into Toriyama's story, his manga and such. It's not just something that they had him scribble out some character designs on a napkin and hand it off and say, here you go, make a movie. And so I think they are looking at the extremely higher amount of success that they've had with the last two One Piece films, plus this new Dragon Ball, and I'm thinking that hopefully they'll start bringing that across the board and realizing that you can do good with these movies if you actually put a little more effort into it than you normally would.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. So, like the rest of you, I am also watching Attack on Titan, which is fun. I wish that show looked better than it did.
It looks pretty damn good, considering that it's a brand new studio, WIT Studio, a kind of a production IG offshoot. And obviously they are rushing to get their TV deadlines in, and presumably will clean up certain scenes for the Blu-ray. But I think it looks pretty damn great, especially in the action scenes.
Well, my point there was, and I think this has been my problem from the beginning, is the color palette on that show. I wish it wasn't so fucking brown and then brownish red. Everything is brown or brownish red. I get tired of looking at it sometimes, like, because I'll do a couple episodes in a row. I don't really watch it week to week. I'll do a few in a row, and it'll be like, ah, man, are they going to go to some place that isn't just fucking brown or brownish red? That would be great. It'd be nice to have a different color palette. But the reason that I bring Attack on Titan up is it comes up every week. This one feels a bit like a sensation.
No doubt. I was at Anime Next 2 weeks ago, and there were already, like, you know, a good dozen Attack on Titan cosplayers. And, you know, the thing was only, like, 7 or 8 episodes in at that point.
Yeah, we had Funimation on last week, and they've got the DVD and Blu-ray rights, and we were kind of, you know, jovially saying, like, you guys must be real fucking happy that you have this show, like, for Blu-ray. And they were like, oh, yeah. And Adam, I think, said, like, it feels a little bit like a Full Metal. And I gotta say, like, I haven't seen this much momentum or interest or hype or just general, like, fandom around a show in a long time. I think it, you know, I don't want to oversell it, but I think it could be the next, you know, hit.
I feel that way, too. I mean, I think that it sort of speaks to the fact that, you know, this guy, Isayama, it's his first manga, but he wrote out the whole story, everything, before he even started doing chapter one. So it's not the case of the typical shonen action adventure, like, we don't know what we're doing, make it up here to there. And so I don't want to spoil anything, but I've also read a little bit ahead, you know, of the manga that's been released here by Kodansha. And where it really excels is foreshadowing, that things aren't really pulled out of a hat. There's always some sort of clue that's established chapters and chapters, you know, previously that you don't realize is something until something happens. And you say, damn, how did I even not see this coming? And then you go back and you're like, oh, they were setting this up the whole time.
Oh, yeah. And the show is doing a great job of this. I've noticed in a couple of places, it's just like, oh, yeah, it's really setting it up. And this is going to be good for rewatching later.
One thing I also really appreciate that you can tell that they kind of have that production IG roots is the fact that I always noted in, you know, a lot of IG's higher budgeted things that they were kind of one of the only studios that really cared about when they do action scenes to depict the spatial relationship between objects and people. And that's really carried over in Wit Studio. Like, I love that this is a show that basically has no speed lines, no generic background, as they have to traverse a large area. If they have to, you know, span a city, they will cross like every inch of that city and you'll see exactly how they get there. I really think that's that brings you into it a lot more than what we've typically seen in anime to date.
It's doing stuff that I haven't seen in a couple of decades in terms of just character movement.
I think some people, you know, when I talk up Attack on Titan and they say, come on, it's not that good. You know, putting aside the fact that that's a whole movement on the internet, I think, you know, there's a contingent of people who always say, like, okay, we want to see something we've never seen before, and Attack on Titan isn't that. And that's true, but I personally think the people who say they want to see something never seen before aren't telling the truth. If that were true, then a ton of people would be watching Trapeze and Kimagure Robot and Kaiba and all the really surreal stuff. I think what people actually want is something that is similar to things they've seen before that works logically and throws in a couple curveballs, and that's what Attack on Titan is, and I think that's why people are really getting behind it.
In that regard, you know, when you go on Crunchyroll and you look at the shows sorted by popularity, man, is that sobering.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get Naruto and Attack on Titan and, you know, maybe a couple other current shows on top. Flowers of Evil is like on page 3.
Yeah.
behind shows that have been off the air for years.
Yep. Yep.
And so is everything, all those other shows that Daryl just mentioned, the all the like artistically interesting ones.
Yeah. It's a little depressing to look at it that way, but speaking of, you know, things where people say, I want to see something different, I want to see something new, and then they just fucking wholeheartedly reject and or don't watch it, Flowers of Evil, of course.
God, yes.
I am really enjoying it. I'm totally caught up. And last episode, I really wonder where the fuck it is how they're gonna wrap this thing up, because I thought the last one was thematically a little confused, and I was wondering. I'm sort of wondering if their entire goal with this particular, with the TV version, which probably won't get a second season, I would imagine, is to just make it a much smaller story. Because, you know, I edit the reviews on Anime News Network. I've mentioned this in the past. And we Carlo just reviewed Volume 5 of the manga. And so I know what happens in that volume of the show. I know what happens in that volume of the manga. And this show is nowhere near getting anywhere near that. And I wonder if they're just making the story dramatically smaller to fit inside this 12 little episodes of, you know, this just terribly artistic and moving and occasionally frustrating thing that I worry we're never going to get anything like it ever again.
Yeah, Vertical manga? Has anyone else read it?
I'm waiting to finish the series, and then I'm going to go into the manga.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Yeah.
Okay, I'd read some of the manga first, and then when I started to watch the show, I said, like, oh, okay, they're pretty much following the manga, and so I didn't really stick with the anime, even though I have been hearing rave reviews about, you know, how much, you know, how cool it looks and all that stuff, or in the case of some people, how awful it looks, but I think it looks pretty cool. Yeah. But I think that might be a valid concern, especially because, you know, like you said, it's on volume 5, and the rate at which they're adopting the chapters isn't really at a breakneck pace. Incidentally, Attack on Titan has the same issue. It's one chapter equals one episode of the show, but they're currently on chapter 50, and it's a 25-episode show, so what's going to happen? I don't have the answer to that for either Flowers of Evil or Attack on Titan.
They will keep Attack on Titan going.
I figure they'll give that a second season. I don't think they're going to claymore that one and like write their own like shoddy ending with a few episodes to go. I think I'm feeling, just based on the momentum it's got both in Japan and here, that that'll keep going. Flowers of Evil, though, that is, you know, one where, good question.
Well, you know, I'm really curious about the reception to Flowers of Evil, because all we ever see is the what I see anyway is the super hardcore American anime fan who thinks they understand Japan coming into the forums to tell us Japan hates this too, you guys. They hate it too. And then they cite like pre-order numbers or whatever for Blu-rays. And they really want to convince you that this show is super unpopular in Japan. No one likes it there and it sucks and I hate it. And no one likes it at all. And I'm wondering, like, what's the truth to that? What's the actual response to that show? Because I can't imagine that we all find it really fucking compelling and one of the most, like, just interesting goddamn things in so many years, and everyone else hates it? I mean, come on. Like,
That wouldn't be the first time.
That raises a tough question, Zach, one that I've pondered for years. Where do you find really good, nuanced criticism and analysis of anime in Japan? It's like, I've talked to Japanese fans about it, and they tend to be like, well, Amazon reviews are usually pretty honest.
What?
Yeah.
Well, they're just trying to say, like, all the actual professional publications are effectively ad copy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of always been like that over there, though. I mean, there's not a whole lot of harsh opinion journalism in Japan. I mean, it's Japan. They're not big on harsh opinion in general.
I don't know. I am happy that it's getting a Blu-ray release. You know, I'll buy that day one. I'm happy to put that one on my shelf. And you know, hopefully it resolves itself in a way that's at least a little bit satisfying, although I think it would be much more appropriate to the show if episode 12 ended on with just nothing.
Static.
Yeah, fucking static. That'd be great. So those are the shows we watch. We keep bringing them up because those are sort of the things people talk about, I guess. But I did see Man of Steel, and I fucking hated it. And I don't know if any of you saw it.
I did not see it because my position on movies where I'm ambivalent on, or I'm like, either I'm not going to see it, is I don't go see it in the theater.
Right.
Well, this is busy season for me, and it's kind of sad, and I'm kind of pissed off about this, but I have not seen one summer blockbuster at all. Going all the way back to Iron Man 3. I just have not had the time. I my desk is littered with those free movie tickets you get with Blu-rays and shit, and I haven't had the opportunity to cash any of them in.
Wow, not even Fast 6?
Not even Fast 6.
Oh, Mike.
Yeah, I know. I'm suffering here.
It's
sucks.
A shame. Justin, I assume you go.
I know no big tent poles. I mean, I saw Kings of Summer, which was awesome, especially if you're a Parks and Rec fan.
Yeah, that finally opened down here.
Oh, good.
I got to see that.
But, you know, they're all fucking superhero movies. I don't care.
Yeah. No, Man of Steel, man. Really hated it. I have not walked out of a movie that fucking pissed off and just, ugh.
It's so fascinating because when I go and I look to see, like, does everybody hate this? And a lot of people are like, oh my God, it was incredible. I loved it. And then
it has an A- cinema score, but so many of my friends are like at best lukewarm on it.
I can't
same
think
here.
Of
same
any
here.
Movie
so
that
strange.
Didn't open at number one that does not have like a high cinema score. Like most films that open at number one, like, the lowest they would have cinema score wise is B+. So I don't know like how much I can really trust that as a metric.
Well,
as far as
true.
like, can you give an example?
Let's see. I believe the last, off the top of my head, but I know for a fact that
I know, like, a lot of people were divided on, say, that new Star Trek movie, which I also didn't see, but that also scored very highly on the cinema score, probably also A minus if memory serves.
Right. And also, I don't think that movie was terrible. It wasn't good, but it wasn't terrible. But you know, there's clearly a big, there's a divide that's starting to become obvious where everyone in the country likes us. I think it's us. I think we're the problem.
How so?
By us, you mean like you and Justin, and I mean you and Zach?
Well, like, there is a subset of, people that we have surrounded ourselves with that just have different tastes than the world at large.
Oh, I feel like we
you're in the Beltway.
We expect movies to be good, and a lot of our peers are happy when they're just not bad.
When they subscribe to the two checklist binary of, do I like this? Does this fit with my social group? And was it what I expected when I walked in the door approximately? Check, check. I like it.
And what they expected is based on the 2 years of, you know, footage and screenshots and news bits doled out to them, such that they pretty much know what they're getting the second they walk in, because they've been following.
Which I avoid completely, and I find that really satisfying. Like, I didn't even know Russell Crowe was in Man of Steel until, like, this week.
I didn't know he was in it until you just said he was in it.
Yes, I'm here.
Spoiled it, sorry.
No, it's all right.
I'm not going to see that piece of shit.
I'm not going to tell you who he plays, so, you know, you still
I can figure it out. But, I mean, the thing is, yeah, I mean, I enjoy movies a lot more when I walk in and I don't even know who's in it. Like, I was shocked when I was in the theater and I was walking past a giant display stand of Guy Pearce, and I'm like, what movie is Guy Pearce in? And then I, like, take two more steps, and it's like, oh, he's in Iron Man 3, like, you know, a day or two before I saw it.
Man, I didn't know that either. God damn it.
Well, right back at you then. Bam.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, I mean, I wonder what that is, because with stuff like Man of Steel and Star Trek, which, Justin, I guess you didn't hate it as much as I did.
No, I didn't. I didn't love it. But
okay. I wonder about that stuff, because it does seem like if you hate on... And that's, you know what, that's a terrible turn of phrase. If you don't like a nerd movie, like a Man of Steel or a Star Trek, and you are someone who goes on the internet and has an opinion, and has, you know, a mildly respectable amount of Twitter followers or whatever...
Then you just attack somebody's livelihood. Their existence.
Seems like that, because I feel like a lot of people are, like... They just blindly love this stuff because they know they're going to get a tremendous amount of blowback if they say anything bad about it. And it's like, this is a... Man of Steel is a product made by multimillionaires to maximize the amount of profit that they can get out of it. It's a big, violent piece of shit with no characters in it. It's a terrible movie with a terrible script, terrible characters... And it has so much fucking terrorism porn in it, I was almost sick by the end of it. And I'm sitting there...
But it's still not as bad as that Owls movie, right?
I will watch that fucking Owls movie 100 times before I ever...
Watch the 2D screening of the Owls of Ga'Hoole.
God, that movie. And it seems like if you go on the internet and say, Man of Steel was great, nerds unite, then everyone goes, yeah, and they're like, it's like this stupid culture thing rather than actually giving your honest opinion about this piece of shit blockbuster you just saw.
Well, that's a counterpoint to that, and that's actually Iron Man 3. A lot of the nerds went online and are like, oh my god, I hated Iron Man 3 because it wasn't exactly what I expected it to be based on they'd done. But, you know, I don't want to go too much into it because Mike hasn't seen the movie, but I liked it a great deal.
I did, and too. I thought Iron Man 3 was great. I think it's...
Yeah, way better than 2.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm psyched up for it because I thought 2 was pretty all right.
I didn't hate 2 the way, you know, Zach did, but I mean, this is hands down a better film.
Yeah, Iron Man 2 was Diet Iron Man. It's just like, yeah, you know, same great taste, just not the same, but it was still okay. But yeah, I want to see number 3.
Well, the genius of marketing these films as brands, and that's what they are, brands at this point, is that you inherently get that psychology of, you know, I associate myself with this brand, and it becomes like it becomes a schoolyard level, you know, iPhone versus Android
Mac,
you know,
versus
Mac
PC.
Versus PC argument, where, you know, you're just like your side, you're gunning because it represents you as a person to you deeply psychologically. You're not arguing the merits of the film at that point. You're arguing your merits as someone with taste.
Yeah, it's advocacy. It's Sega does what Nintendo don't.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's fucking sickening. It means that we can't talk about the arts anymore. It means we can't talk about movies. Because if I go
really
online,
hesitate to call any of these movies art.
But popular culture is part of art, and I get what you're saying, Justin. You know that I'm with you on that. But if I go see a movie and I can't go online, and like if I go online and say, "Wow, that was a big piece of shit. Here's why," and I get a bunch of people,
no one reads past. Here's why.
Yeah. Well, okay. Daryl said it best. But if I say like, "Here's why." I will not get an intelligent conversation about that. I'll get a bunch of people acting like I fucked their mother. That's what I'm going to get. Like,
call me a cynic, but I'm just like, I'm not surprised that, you know, you're basically, people are not thinking about these things on any level. It's all gut reaction. So I'm not surprised that you're not getting any, you know, intelligent response about this.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm just fucking tired of this dumb nerd tribalism. It's a fucking movie. Unless you're a profit participant or you made it, stop getting so fucking upset when someone says they didn't like it.
It's the number one movie in the world. Are you really like in an elite group of like comrades by liking, you know, the movie that is like the top grossing film worldwide?
The same herd mentality as a sports team.
Me and my friends are in this little. We're into this little underground film you may have not seen called Man
It's called The Avengers.
Yeah. God damn it. Anyway, the only thing I wanted to point out, since none of you have actually watched it, it does have the most hilariously overt, like comically intrusive product placement I've ever seen. The camera.
Oh, even worse than
Blade Trinity?
I've never seen Blade Trinity, Daryl, but thank you for reminding me that movie exists. But no, there will be massive destruction. They will blow up a 7-Eleven. They will lovingly show you the front of the 7-Eleven. The front, the building will get blown up. The 7-Eleven logo will land right side up, and then the camera will sort of awkwardly pan over to make sure that the 7-Eleven logo is still in the frame while you're watching someone talking in front of this destruction.
And then somebody whose life was saved by Superman will say, "Oh, thank heaven."
Yes, I would not be shocked if that happened, but if you, that happens with IHOP, 7-Eleven, and Sears, in the film. Who is
that?
Isn't
that almost 3 hours long?
Yeah, it's like 2.5 hours long.
God. Can't they all just treat product placement like the Wayne's World movie did? Because that was the best way to do it.
It was, you're right.
Does Sears have money for product placement?
I don't know. But
Sears owns a lot of real estate. A lot of the Sears stores, like, they own those lots. They have, they have collateral is what they have.
But there are several shots of Superman rising, you know, from a sitting position, rising in front of the Sears logo.
That sounds hilarious.
Well, you know, Mike, I had to entertain myself somehow in that piece of shit. Anyway. We should get to Twitter.
Does he brandish a bag of Doritos?
No, I don't think
the Doritos was. Mountain Dew combo as he boots up his Xbox One and can't get online.
Okay.
One Twitter question down.
Yeah, really. Let's go ahead and get to Twitter because we got plenty of this stuff. First up, from Blue Alexander 93, question for everyone: best and worst anime DVDs that you've ever bought.
I think worst in this case has got to be like fails to entertain on any level, which for me, I was expecting something to laugh at because it was so terrible and it was just like really dull. So I'm going to go with Arcade Gamer Fubuki, which I bought expecting to get a funny clip out of to show at panels, and I got nothing.
Absolutely. Yeah, Justin laughs evilly. Thanks,
Well, no, other people would come up to me after panels being like, "You got to show Arcade Gamer Fubuki, Daryl." And I'm like, "Yeah, all right, I'll check it out." Psychopaths?
There's nothing entertaining about that. Nothing. Other than watching me cut myself while I was making it.
Is that an alternate angle?
Should have been. Couldn't get clearance.
Well, you say artistic, Daryl. My first thought is technical aspects, and I think one of the worst anime DVDs ever made was that first pressing of Cyber City OEDO, which not only had a number of horrible video glitches, but had one of the audio tracks bleeding into the other one because they had a bad tape.
How would you say it compares to the Tokyo Pop release of Kenji's Spring, aka Spring and Chaos? First
one. I never got that one. I just saw the screenshots.
My personal favorite is CPM's release of, actually it's tied between Dominion Tank Police and Heroic Legend of Arslan. Tank Police was especially bad because Manga Video cut the two-parters together and made two episodes instead of four, and they unspliced them again, but did so clumsily and completely forgot to restore the original Japanese ending theme. Wow. So just you'll watch it in Japanese, and suddenly you have the dub ending theme.
Right, because they redid all that music.
Did all the music.
Tank Police.
So you're missing audio. You're missing. You have these horrible glitches. They completely cut out some of the recaps. It's a mess. A bunch of the CPM stuff from that era came from Manga UK PAL Masters, which came from Japanese NTSC Masters. So it had gone from NTSC to PAL back to NTSC.
Oh.
So there was the frame rate change.
When I was editing the trailer, some of the trailers for like Venus Wars, I was literally having trouble editing it because each frame of animation was dragged across three or four frames of video.
Oh, God.
It was so bad.
Horrible.
So far we're 3-for-3 naming Central Park media releases. Zach, how about you?
I was thinking about this in terms of the show and like what I had actually purchased and what I thought I was getting. Versus, production problems.
Yeah, I figured the content of the show was more interesting to people.
DVD, he said DVD. I actually did buy Panzer Dragoon on VHS.
Okay.
From a Suncoast for full price.
Expecting it to be cool because you like the Panzer Dragoon Saturn game?
Yes, indeed.
Yep.
And, I did not. And
yeah. That's not a good
show. How about Best?
Yeah, Best, I guess. I don't know. That's a
reference quality, wonderful movie that I love watching over and over again, and I really like the commercial release. Royal Space Force. Yeah, it's a really nice DVD and Blu-ray package from Oniamis, from Bandai Visual USA, and I'm pretty sure you can still get that thing for 40 or 50 bucks. It's totally worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I do wish that they'd at least been able to keep that Anno commentary track from the awful Oniamis right. DVD that Manga put right. out.
Yeah, that's always how it is. There's always the awful initial commercial version that has extras that you just never see again. But the Bandai Visual one is quite nice, and I've watched it 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, I mean, I would have said, another Bandai Visual pick for Best, would have been those Pat Labor movies just because of, the not just the presentation of it, but also, the extras with it. I don't know if we should really count extras because there's been some shitty movies that have awesome extras with it. That Steamboy collector's gift set, I'm looking at you. But that is a good one, even though it doesn't have all the English dubs on it. That's a shame.
Justin?
How about you guys for Best?
Best.
We've gotten this question a few times in like Best Blu-ray, and I always go back to the Kenshin OVA disc from Aniplex.
Yeah, that looks pretty nice. I'm hoping. I feel like I should ask me this question a little bit because I just got the shipping notification for my Macross Plus Blu-ray box from Japan.
Oh, dude! Justin, the only problem with that is that there's going to have to be a fan resync. Man, they have the Japan only dub.
Japan only dub.
Big West didn't bother getting the rights back for the English soundtrack that Manga had to create piecemeal themselves for episode 4, so they made their own dub.
What?
Yeah, it has most of the same cast, but notably they didn't get Bryan Cranston back as Isamu. They have David Hayter.
Just for episode 4.
Just for episode 4.
Well, that'll be interesting.
A dub that time forgot, man. Yeah, that's a little disappointing to me too. I don't have the scratch for that thing now, but that's on my list.
Well, guess I better get to authoring.
Yep.
It's not like I am powerless in this situation.
Exactly. But yeah, that's one really interesting wrinkle. And if you go to my Dubs That Time Forgot panel at Anime Expo, that's one of the things I'm going to be talking about there.
Plug, plug.
Cool. Oh yeah, speaking of that, just a reminder, we're a couple weeks out from Anime Expo. You'll be able to see Justin and I and Mike, you'll be there. Maybe we'll.
I'll be there. My first and maybe my only Anime Expo ever. I don't get out that way that often. I'm very excited for it.
Well, we got 90 minutes to fill on Live Ancast, so we may drag you up.
Oh yeah, and I plan on getting in there at some point. So yeah, I mean, feel free.
But that, I think that's Saturday morning at like. Saturday morning, like
9 o'clock in the morning.
It's like 10.
Why do anime cons do that to people still?
I don't know. Especially with, you know, they know, oh, these guys are journalists. They're drinking at night. don't put them on something at 10 a.m.
Don't knock it, man. I filled panel rooms at 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday.
Well, there's
always
that.
People looking for entertainment.
But yeah, no, that's Saturday. It's Saturday at 10 in the anime music video programming room. So
because they
fun.
Didn't have any rooms big enough for us.
Oh, yeah, right.
We will be lucky to fill the first three rows of that fucking room.
Yeah, we'll be lucky to fill 90 minutes is what we'll be lucky to fill. Anyway.
Oh, if you drag me, please. I'll fill 90 minutes.
Sure.
Please. Are we going to have trouble keeping it under 90 minutes on this show? Answer, yes.
Yeah. Bingo.
Yeah, but I'll have plenty of prizes to give away. People can win some free shit that's been sitting on my shelf for a long time. all right. AC in the 715 asks, you guys going to see Pacific Rim? Do you think it'll do good enough to spawn more giant robot movies, or is it another Speed Racer?
I am definitely going to see Pacific Rim.
I mean, yeah, of course, right?
Know,
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched the trailer for it or anything. I've looked at that poster and said, okay, yeah. Going to go see that. I don't need to know anything else about this movie.
Yeah, don't tell me anything else. I'm already on board. Let's go. But yeah.
I'll wait for the reviews. Kind of hope it sucks so everyone can make Pacific Rim job jokes.
I'll do that anyway.
Yeah, I'll do that anyway.
I don't know if it's really good. It's probably going to be somewhere in the middle. I think Speed Racer bombing was largely a fan nerd blowback against the Matrix sequels more than the film itself, which I love. You know, I know opinion on that is divided.
That's a wonderful movie. It really is.
I think opinion on Speed Racer is fully turned around. No pun intended. there was a blowback against that movie, and now it seems like anytime you hear anyone bring it up, the people who bring it up are the people who love it and appreciate it. I am one of those people now. I think Speed Racer is a great movie. I think that it accomplishes exactly what they set out to do, and it is probably the most thematically successful live-action adaptation of a cartoon that there is.
Perhaps the most expensive art film ever made.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not? I wouldn't call it an art film, but okay.
but in a sense. I don't know if we'll get more giant robot live-action films out of Pacific Rim if it does well, just because it's kind of a miracle we got Pacific Rim in the first place. I don't believe it's an adaptation of some previous existing thing, and that's, of course, the movie live-action way to do things is to find something that worked in some other medium and then make a movie out of it.
Well, the question itself ignores no insults at this guy. The question itself ignores where Pacific Rim came from. That got greenlit because of this little movie series called Transformers. Transformers made it so that we could get Pacific Rim.
And yet,
if it sucks, that's fine. You know, if it sucks, whatever. But this is what we are getting as a result of getting more giant robot movies out of Transformers being so successful. So if this is a huge hit,
Voltron.
Sure. You know? Yeah, sure.
They've been gunning for Voltron for years now. They've been wanting to do it.
Yeah. And it's been in turnaround. They can't get it done. But if Pacific Rim does well, maybe that'll open the door.
Maybe. Well, we'll find out. I am excited to see it, though. You know, it looks really cool. I have watched the trailers, and man, the imagery in it is fucking bombastic. Like, I look.
I go back and I watch the trailers after I see the movie, and then I get mad knowing that everyone else who saw those trailers saw the very end of the movie. Which I will bet money. Like, I haven't seen the trailer, but I will bet money that the end of the movie is in those trailers.
I don't know, man. It's Guillermo del Toro. Mostly, they're just showing you like giant fucking. They're showing you that Ghidorah ripoff, smashing up the bridge or whatever. Like that's basically what they're showing you. I don't know. It looks fucking cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Anyway, Zero Intelligence asks, any of you keeping up with the latest Hunter x Hunter arc?
I sure am. Oh yeah, I'm loving it. It's the Kimura Ant arc, which we're finally into territory that was not animated by the old Hunter x Hunter series. This is new stuff that only Madhouse is doing. I'm a little concerned because that's another one where the manga is still pretty well ahead of where the anime is, and Mr. Togashi, the manga creator, he really kind of wrote himself into a corner in terms of power level creep. It's just like by the end of the Kimura Ant arc in the manga, every major character just seems so unimaginably hilariously powerful. You just lose any sense of awe or tension.
What kept me from getting into Hunter x Hunter is that's all I'd heard is that he'd wrote himself into a corner and that he just stopped writing because he couldn't figure out what to do.
What gives me hope is that the anime version is moving along a lot faster, and there are a couple of scenes so far, only a couple, that don't really happen in the manga version at all. That also seem to hint at, maybe they're gonna try and fix it and just make it tighter and faster and better and clean it up.
See, I saw the old one, and I was so burned by how that just went off a cliff. I don't want to chance it again.
Yeah, see, I never saw the old one. I didn't see the old one because I had heard that it just kind of fizzled out. But when the new one came out and got rave reviews, it was just like, okay, Togashi was actually making the manga on a regular basis again instead of going on hiatus constantly. Maybe this time they're finally going to have a really good, solid adaptation throughout. So far, it hasn't disappointed me one bit. It's really just cool and entertaining and fast-paced. It's appointment TV for me. Every Saturday at like 11:30 p.m., I'm there watching it.
All right. Bueno One asks, if the Sailor Moon remake does get made and it's successful,
which it will,
what things from that time do you think they would remake next? To spin off this question a little bit, I'm a little... Maybe I'm not surprised that got delayed. What the fuck, Toei? Like, just put the shit out. Like, don't screw around with this one, man. Like,
stop it. It's not Toei.
Do you think that maybe it might be a case where they change the character designs or something like that? Because we haven't even seen a single, like, big... one iota of new art or like a new screenshot or anything like that from this new Sailor Moon.
Contrast that with Ghost in the Shell Arise, which is just like, you know, right from announcement day, we were seeing key art from that.
I am going to make a behind the scenes prediction, and I have nothing on which to base this on other than things I kind of know, but I am betting that Naoko Takeuchi is being an unholy bitch about this.
Well, see, Justin, I didn't want to say that.
I will say that.
Well, a lot of times when these productions get stuck in the mud, it's because of the original creator and the fabulous veto power that they have over everything.
And she, you know, she was so successful before. She's got to be like, well, no, this has to be perfect. Can you imagine what that must be like working on a TV show under those conditions with the mangaka breathing down your neck?
Yeah, sounds intense.
All right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to once again implicate Toei, but... fucking Takeuchi. I wish she would just, you know, get the fuck out of the way. Cause
she's already got, like, a house made of gold.
Rocket like, car.
What has she got to lose?
Maybe all that's I have to part say of the problem, man.
Her best friend is Ryoko Ikeda, the Rose of Versailles woman. She's not exactly known for being fun.
I am watching in raw Japanese because it's not being subtitled by anyone, but the parody Glass Mask shorts.
Oh, tell me what that's like. I'm curious about that.
Amazing. I have no idea what's being said, but I've got like a familiarity with the Glass Mask. I guess the title of it is The Glass Mask Butt in English. And it is... it's really funny and really like goofy and dumb, and I think it makes fun of like those old shoujo conventions in a pretty funny way. I wish I knew what was being said, but I think it's great because I wouldn't have expected that from something as melodramatic as the Glass Mask of all things.
Glass Mask is so cheesy. I kind of love it because it's just so over the top.
And that's what the anime, the comedy is going for. And I guess now there's going to be like a little movie of it now based on the same screwball antics where they really don't have to change a whole lot to make it a comedy.
I remember when Brother Dear Brother was out.
Which is originally. Awesome.
Yeah, which is. In Japan, the snicker, you know, joke that because every episode used to end with the line, you know, the main character going, "Brother, is there no end to my tears?" in Japanese, they were actually goofing on that. They were just like, hey, brother, is there no end to my laughter? Which was funnier in Japanese, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
All right, moving on. Zero Intelligence asks, thoughts
on... You didn't even answer what things would they remake next from that time.
Yeah, we got to move on, guys. We got a half hour here. Thoughts on what the hell is up with Valgrave the Liberator?
I assume this is based on what happened in the most recent episode.
It seems perfectly straightforward to me. I don't know. I mean, it seems totally conventional to me. You know, what's to wonder about?
Isn't that show funny, crazy?
I don't know. I mean, it really embodies like that Code Geass, take everything in the world and throw it into a show. And oh yeah, there's robots too, in case robots are a thing you like, and see if people like it. I think, you know, some people like that. I am kind of not so hot on that new Sunrise formula, but I guess it really depends if you could tolerate, you know, Code Geass and maybe even Guilty Crown. I guess Valgrave is being received a little better than Guilty Crown, at least. But I am withholding judgment on that one. But yeah, based on what happened in the last episode, which I'm not even watching the show caught up, but I heard about it because it was impossible to avoid. It sounds like, you know, they'll probably sort of build up, you know, try to put the guy around their finger sort of thing as a result. But who knows? It could just be really weird.
Okay. Philosomancer asks, irrelevant by several months, but what did you guys think of the anime Mirai Works?
I think it was the right idea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that thing is still going strong. That said, of this year's crop, I've actually only seen Little Witch Academia, which we've talked of. I don't know if it's been talked about on the podcast, but that shit's wonderful.
It's neat. I wouldn't say it's wonderful. It's neat.
Oh, it's one of those, say, not perfect, but I'm glad shit like it is getting made.
Sure, exactly. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Stuff like Little Witch Academia needs to exist, needs to keep happening. Yeah.
And that's basically why I said it's the right idea, because Japan needs to be giving up-and-coming guys a shot at making like something a full-length thing. A lot of the times with the new like really short screwball experimental comedy stuff, that's sort of been the way that a lot of these newcomers have been getting their foot in the door, because it's no money. But I think the anime Mirai Works are at least like sort of like akin to back in the 80s when there was things like, say, Robot Carnival and anthology things where they'd say, hey, you're a cool artist, do some cool thing. And yeah, that's kind of what anime Mirai is.
The only thing that troubles me a little is that Little Witch Academia, it's part of the, you know, the Young Animators Training Project. But it's the entire thing was conceived by Yo-Yo Shinari, who's like 42. And I just like, no, we need more guys who are making good anime in their 20s and 30s.
That's part of why Attack on Titan is so cool.
Tetsuro Araki is like, what, 34, 35?
Yeah, he's roughly awesome. Our age.
Oh, yeah, that was another horrible, you know, crazy thing about going to Anime Next a couple of weeks ago, was meeting Sayo Yamamoto, the director of Lupin, the woman called Fujiko Mine. She's a year younger than me.
What are you doing with your life, Mike?
Yeah, I know. What am I even doing with my life?
But yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see that, because I mean, these are the people who are gonna, you know, pick up the torch, as it were. I mean, I've always felt kind of weird saying, oh yeah, the next generation of people are guys like Mamoru Hosoda and the like, and it's like, yeah, but Hosoda's not that young.
He's mid-40s, right?
You're right.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say about Little Witch Academia is it's made me a little curious about Madoka Box, because the entire team from Little Witch Academia also worked on Madoka Box. So,
don't be curious about Madoka Box.
Yeah, you're barking up the wrong tree, buddy. It's neat to see that that's getting a release, though. I'm curious what's going on with Trigger. That's the
an Inferno Cop.
Yeah,
I know. I don't.
Get me a shirt. Get me a shirt when you go to AX. They better have shirts.
We'll try. They better have something, man.
Okay. Let's see here. Zach Logan asks from the One Piece podcast, if you could fund a Kickstarter to release an unreleased series with some feasibility, what would it be?
Well, first off, congrats to Zach on his Kickstarter succeeding. They're going off to Japan.
Yeah, he managed to get people to pay for him to go on vacation. That's awesome.
Yep. And, you know, put out some podcasts.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Hey, I'm just joking, of course.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, you know. There's absolutely an element of, yeah, he's going to have a fabulous trip bankrolled by his listeners. But it's just like, no, he's going to kick back some content.
These are the benefits of having listeners.
Yeah, everyone wins.
So to answer his question, since he did have the qualifier with some feasibility, that rules out Macross anything.
Well, I was going to say Macross 7, so, well, I'll just shut up. Anyway, you guys.
I would probably say something like a Shin Mazinger Z, since we've been getting a lot of the new Dynamic Pro Gonagai type stuff. That would be one thing. Another thing that's at least in the realm of possibility, and we've never gotten it in the U.S., is just finally give us a subtitled remastered version of Space Battleship Yamato Season 1 and 2, even 3. I mean, it's just the amount of years people have, you know, a small dead amount of people by now, but, you know, wanting that show in a proper format, and we've just never been getting it, is kind of obscene. And I think there's probably at least still enough people to fund a Kickstarter for something like that.
Yeah, I would go with the toy animated films of the 60s. You know, probably starting with my favorite of the bunch and the weirdest of the bunch, Gulliver's Travels Beyond the Moon. You know, then Little
Not Prince counting the crappy Dragon. DVD that was released to that, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I can't find another source for that film, and every audio source of that in English just sounds terrible. It's all blown out and distorted. It's just one of those, wow, I wonder if there's even a good English version anywhere in the world. But yeah, there's an entire crop of films, and we've gotten a couple of them. You know, we got Puss in Boots from Discotech. I want more of that magic.
Cool. Jason?
Well, if by feasible you mean that I would actually raise the money, then that means all the 80s sports shows are out, right?
Yeah, sure.
So no Touch. Well, you know, you can dream.
Right. Or Musashi no Ken. That'd be great. Now, probably... I think I would go for something out of left field like Tokimeki Tonight, or, you know, maybe some of the other more like slice of lifey shows from the '80s. I don't know. Most of my favorites are movies, and that seems a little more plausible. Like having an actual DVD, nice maybe Blu-ray of Windaria.
Oh yeah, good pick.
Ooh, yeah, absolutely.
I want to cry in HD.
As long as it also includes the Once Upon a Time edit.
No, I don't want that. That needs to die in a fire.
Narrated by the professor from Gilligan's Island? Oh, yeah.
Well, how much did he need money for rent?
So, wow, none of us said Legend of the Galactic Heroes.
Well, who's going to say that at this point?
Well, I mean, honestly, guys, I feel like somehow, that's going to happen in the next couple of years.
I think we said that the last two episodes.
I was going to say, the thing is just like I've been saying that for the last couple of years.
Here's what's going to happen after
their failed pre-order rally. They got to go another way. But Zach, how is it going to happen?
Here's how it's going to happen. That shit's going to get licensed by somebody who's really ambitious, and they're like a startup, and you don't really know who they are, and they're sort of based out of Japan a little bit, and somehow they managed to convince them to get the license to Legend of Galactic Heroes, and they're going to put it out, and it's going to have like enough problems that can be summed up in a single screenshot on the Blu-ray release.
That no one will buy.
The screenshot culture will just fucking take it over. Someone will get a hold of like a check disc. There will be like one problem in one frame, and they'll be like, "This fucking sucks." And then no one will buy it, and then that'll be it. That's how this is gonna go. That's my prediction for Legend of Galactic Hero.
You know, there's been a few incidents where bad encodes have been overblown, but for the most part, the screenshot culture is mostly on the money. I gotta say, I can't think of a scenario. I'm sure there's been one or two where they've gone notes over a release that wasn't actually that bad.
Well, okay, so I guess in this case I would bring up like Star Trek.
Maybe Lane.
Lane was going to be my example.
Lane would be absolutely an example.
Okay,
but you want to look at something like Star Trek: The Next Generation, Season 2, where there was one shot where they fucked up an effect shot. It is on screen for less than a second. That one screenshot gets quoted over and over and over and over and over and over again in any discussion you see of those Blu-rays. And the rest of them look fucking fantastic. Like,
it's only 99.98% perfect.
Yeah,
fuck
right.
It.
It just because there's like this one millisecond of problem. But that is probably what's going to... I would predict, like, if I were writing that story, I would say, yep, okay, that's what's going to happen to Legend of Galactic Heroes. It's this thing everyone has wanted for decades. There's going to be one little problem with it, and none of those fucking super nerds will buy it.
Didn't you download the badly encoded video that took, like, 5 or 6 hours to download per episode on the iPhone app, Zach?
I did not. Really?
I've forgotten about that.
I didn't know that was a thing.
That was a thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember when it happened, but yeah, I never
they have completed English scripts done by Taka from Anime Expo, or actually now, Takahashi.
Taka. He's a commercial interpreter and translator who works all the hell over the place.
Yeah, he's really good, and so they have good scripts, and that's the only time they've ever been released is for those shitty iPhone encodes.
Okay, Space Cat Power asks, "What's the most non-nerdy thing you do?" And he says, hockey doesn't count, Tool, but I think he means soccer.
Soccer.
I think he does mean, well, I mean, I mentioned hockey lately because the Bruins are in the Stanley Cup. You know, it's a Boston thing. The most non-nerdy thing I do, I would say travel, simply because an awful lot of the nerds that I know, they don't travel unless they're going to fan events, unless they're going to do nerd stuff. And a lot of times I'll tie a soccer trip or a convention in, but I like to travel just for the sake of traveling.
All right.
That's not nerdy.
I mean,
Justin's pretty non-nerdy with his CrossFitting.
I may be changing that.
Justin is a CrossFit nerd.
A CrossFit nerd. And I'm blending the nerds together because I literally just hours ago had one of my CrossFit coaches and another CrossFit friend of mine over to watch Millennium Actress.
Awesome.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. The only non-nerdy thing I do is eat a lot.
Is that not nerdy? Fucking literally everything's nerdy now, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Only if you're obsessive about it, which I'm not obsessive about anything.
That was a joke, right?
Couldn't even deliver it with a straight face.
Daryl?
Unfortunately, you know, even the most non-nerdy thing I do is still so fucking nerdy. I am pretty big into professional wrestling from both the United States and Japan and Mexico and Europe and all that good stuff.
That's one of the few really social things you do around your neck of the woods, right? You'll go to the promotions and get like front row seats, right?
If there are independent shows in town, I'll do that, and of certain caliber, you know, some of the higher level independents, I'll go to those. But yeah, I mean, I have pretty significant knowledge on that stuff, and every Wednesday I've just been collecting about 2 hours of stuff to show on YouTube and, you know, going on a site that's basically the equivalent of how SyncTube used to be, and just watching pro wrestling matches from around the world. And, you know, it's therapeutic in a way. I mean, as Zach knows, you know, there's a benefit to, even if you find, you know, 20 to 30 source people who are, you know, into this, even if you're not, you know, physically nearby, just to show this shit and, you know, talk about it with somebody, you know, can really, you know, get your interests up, you know, renew them in, you know, other things. So, yeah, I mean, I've known about that for many, many years. I mean, certainly Anime World Order, it's a wrestling reference. But, yeah, I mean, I've really been following, you know, New Japan right now. So, you know, brought to you by Cardfight Vanguard.
That's
so
right. Wish you were.
Do you, Daryl, do you follow Doglegs at all?
No, I don't know what that is.
Our friend of Anna and Heath Cousins, who used to do some of our video content, he's finishing up a documentary that he's been making for years on it. It's a Japanese wrestling league for severely handicapped people.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, you would think it's exploitative, but it's actually kind of empowering.
Sounds interesting. I'll have to look into it. I mean, certainly there's far, far more diversity in independent league, you know, Japanese wrestling than, you know, even in the United States. So I'll look into it. I'm not sure if they've got DVDs or anything, but
Daryl,
I can track it down.
Daryl, you know who's coming to my town soon? And by my town, I mean like two towns over in a high school auditorium, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, yeah. Well, he lives around that area. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's like an all-star wrestling league. Yeah, he's looking pretty busted, but it's still Hacksaw Jim. It's still, you know, the big beard and that weird crooked grin of his.
Yeah, I don't really go for the Mickey Rourke sort of scene of independent pro wrestling.
Yeah, my wife sent me the email for that. I was just like, hey, you want to go see the wrestler in real life?
Yeah, no, the things I tend to look at are usually more younger, up-and-coming guys, you know, a little more acrobatic stuff. Nowadays, a lot of those federations are being used as sort of the scouting pool for when they get recruited for WWE and such. So it's been pretty interesting to see lately in WWE how some of the big guys they've got now are actually people who are toiling away on those indie scenes for, you know, about 8 or 9 years. So, Zach, how about you?
You know, I was going to say, like, well, you know, you know, really into like art and politics, and by art I mean, you know, art, not like just movies and stuff.
Not pop culture.
I like going to art gallery openings and seeing new artists, and I like modern art. I like that stuff. It's fucking neat and cool to see like what people are doing. But being really into that, I could still say like I'm an art nerd or I'm a politics nerd. Like nerd doesn't mean anything. So. I guess I have a little problem with the way this question is worded in the first place.
I think most people, the common perception of if you were to say I go to art galleries, they wouldn't say, oh, you nerd.
Yeah, well, no, I've
you'd
gotten
say,
that.
Ooh, snobby.
Yeah, no, I get, no, that's, yeah, I'm, yeah. I get that. Okay. All right. Let's see here. I know Daryl and Mike, you guys both have an opinion on this. Buster Blader asks about Kansai Club's The Crater Kickstarter debacle. What's going on with
to
that?
To fill people in on this, a new company sort of started here in Fort Lauderdale, roughly where I live, and they said, we're going to release Osamu Tezuka, a collection of short stories called The Crater. So they put up a Kickstarter with a goal of $3,500. And like every single Osamu Tezuka manga Kickstarter, it met its goal immediately. Demand for that was like, you know, huge. And so within a few days of the Kickstarter's completion, they said, hey, you know what? Every single person actually needs to give us another $5 for shipping, because we said if we get above this much money, everybody gets a free T-shirt. And then, hey, guess what? If everybody gets a free T-shirt, now you got to pay another $5. So it's not really free. But tell you what, if you don't want the free T-shirt, just give us an extra $2. And this is dependent on every single one of, like, you know, the 900 or however many people they've got getting this email and then going to the Kickstarter and clicking manage their pledge and upping to a tier that doesn't exist. So
yeah,
that's a debacle.
It's been incredibly poorly handled. And Daryl, you're just covering the domestic angle. If you
live the international is even worse.
Yeah, if you live outside of the continental U.S., you're basically paying for the book again. But, you know, because the book cost is $35. And I've had people tell me, it was just like, well, it's because they went to hardcover when they were originally going to do softcover. And it's like, yeah, you know what? I don't care. It's all a result of their bad planning. And I had another guy who was just like, I don't understand why there's so much whining about this. It's only $3. It's like, okay, I guess you don't understand the value of money. You know,
right.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, guys. I'm a working man. I count every cent.
And here's the
like
thing.
That happens, it's, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
When they put out their update to clarify, because I posted the question, I said, okay, please justify if you made 13 times the amount of your original goal,
yeah, they're
why do we need to kick in money?
A $50,000, you know, of course, they're only going to get about, what, $35,000,
$38,000? No, they get about, you know, $45,000. Kickstarter and Amazon combined take about 7% total.
Okay.
So they get a good bit. But here's what they said. They said, the $3,500 goal was made up and has no bearing on the reality of the actual cost of the project. We threw out a number that we knew we would get and that we would pay the rest of it out of pocket. And I said, like, my basic response to that is, this is why you set your Kickstarter goal to be what it actually costs to do the project, so that when shit like this happens, you can actually pay for it. But, you know, I'm going to see, it's going to be interesting when that Kickstarter ends by the time this episode comes out, how many hundreds and hundreds of people will have not gotten that message. And what are they going to do with that money? Are they going to refund everybody or what?
Yeah, it's, you know, I want to see the book. I'm excited about it, but at the same time, it's just like, man, that was handled so badly.
Okay. Yeah, admittedly, I have not been following that story, but it's interesting to hear about. BioD42 asks, who are your arch nemeses?
I used to have some really good arch nemeses, but they've all grown up and gotten lives and started families and stuff like that. So I have no arch nemesis, and I'm the kind of person who I need an enemy to really like inspire me to do stuff. So if anyone embodies everything that I am not and is roughly my age, let me know so I can be your arch nemesis.
I don't really carry grudges or keep enemies.
It's not a real grudge I keep. It's more to say,
yeah, I mean, it's
you,
like,
sir, are my nemesis.
Yeah, it's like I'm aware that there are people out there that don't like me that much, and I try not to dwell on it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
People I actually don't like, I don't even talk to.
I'm sure I have some, but that's what the block button on Twitter is for.
Yeah, that level of like people who just harass you, that's exactly, you know, it's, don't even deal with that. That's not even like worth engaging with.
Oh, I don't even block my crazies. I have a couple of guys that will go after me now and then. Since they follow me, that means I could DM them. I'll just leave it at that.
What's going on, buddy?
Who's Justin's arch nemesis?
Something along those lines.
I have one, but I don't want to say it.
Okay. All right.
It's a real arch nemesis then.
Yeah. No, I'm sure I have plenty, but the strategy now when I'm in my, you know, early 30s is to ignore it, because otherwise I'll wind up back in therapy.
It's kind of fun not being a complete child about when people get pissy at you.
Yeah. It's not necessarily at this point, it's not necessarily just pissy. It's like actively hateful and shitty towards you and like people you love. Like,
well, you're a special case. You have somehow but unwittingly climbed into a cesspool and are now like having to find every tetanus shot within a 50-mile radius.
Yeah, pretty much. Anyway, all right. Do any of you guys read American comics? Yes, I know Daryl does.
No.
This is from Abu Nass 3R. But he says he can't believe a world where Justin hasn't read Chew, a.k.a. Archer for Foodies. I don't know if you've heard of that, Justin.
No, tell me more.
Well, I can't.
I know you can't, but I know that.
That intrigues me.
Right? Well, Archer for Foodies? Gimme.
He says, check out Chew. Okay. All right. This is a good question. Campion 10 says, my worlds have been opened up to A1 Blu-rays with English subs that won't be released here like only yesterday. Any other recommendations?
That's Mike's department, I think.
We got a lightning around this stuff, guys. So
I mean, for Europe, if you have a code-free Blu-ray player, you know, you can get a pretty damn good Blu-ray of Rogen Z, which is a movie that I enjoy quite a bit. You know, you can get Madoka Magica for an actual reasonable price. Oh, excuse me, I called it Madoka Magica. I should have just called it Dokes.
The Dokes.
The Dokes.
No, not even the Dokes, just Dokes.
Oops. I prefer the Dokes.
But what else? The Musashi Miyamoto kind of quasi-documentary biopic. Not necessarily a successful experiment, but a really interesting one. And that's another Manga UK thing. I'm actually very excited. I don't know if, Justin, are you going to get this? The Manga UK Street Fighter 2 movie Blu-ray that just came out?
Have it already. It is gorgeous.
Really? Okay, yeah. I think I got to order that then.
Yeah, it's really
I do like
nice.
That movie quite a bit. Gisaburu Sugi's finest.
And that's one of those things that there's no Japanese Blu-ray. I think they got a film print and they just did a really good job setting that up on their own.
I believe it's a copy of the Japanese transfer. It has Japanese slates and everything.
I see. Okay, so all right. I'm just intrigued because usually there's a Japanese Blu-ray and then everything follows after that. But this doesn't seem to be the case with Street Fighter 2.
Right. Street Fighter 2, let me think.
I'm going to Amazon UK right now. I wonder how much it costs.
As far as Japanese imports, you would do a bunch of the early Bandai Visual stuff over there has English everywhere on it because they were intending to release all of it through Oniamis and they only released a handful of it. So both Pat Labor movies, assuming Sentai doesn't put them out here eventually, as well as the Ghost in the Shell first movie. There's actually two versions of that. One's better than the other. But those all have English on them. Let's see.
And while you're thinking, I should clarify, the stuff you get from Japan, that is Region A and is fully compatible with American Blu-ray players. What I was talking about, Europe and UK, that's Region B. So you need something with hacked firmware or some kind of schmiggity-schmaggity to get it working on an American Blu-ray player.
Right.
High Top Ninja asks, no dubs that Time Forgot at Otakon this year, Mike?
I did it for 5 years running at Otakon. I mean, I've been running that panel at one convention or another pretty much every season since 2002, since Dave Merrill and I first conceived of it. And I just put it on the peg this year. I got a couple of other new panels for Otakon. You can come and see those instead.
But there's no shortage of new material. I think that's kind of what they're worried about.
No shortage of new material at all. I mean, I think this is my lowest ebb that I've been at during a con season, but I still have about 40 or 50 titles to choose from.
Do you want to plug what else you're doing at Otakon on the subject of that?
Oh, sure. Well, what I am doing at Otakon is I am doing a slightly expanded edition of Worst Anime of All Time. I have about 8 or 10 new titles that I'm going to mix in there. So that'll be a fun time. I'm doing a new panel that I've developed for Otakon called Outsider Anime, which is about, you know, about Japanese animators who don't really work in the anime system, like short filmmakers, you know, auteurs, that kind of stuff. Folks like Mirai Mizue, who just had a successful Kickstarter of his own, artists like that. And I'm doing a big, stupid, let's look at this clip. Let's look at this clip. That's just called I Love the 80s, Anime Edition. So, you know, we're going to start with all this, you know, we're going to start with Robotech and Voltron, but then we're going to go into all kinds of crazy OVAs and ridiculous TV shows from the 80s.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's my Otakon slate.
Yeah,
and I'll throw in mine too real quick since I know we got other questions. I am also at Otakon doing panels. I'm doing a 100 years of Japanese animation, a brief overview. Name says it all. I'm going to cover a lot of that pre-1970s stuff, you know, just because people don't even seem to know it exists. Anime in 15 minutes or less. That's all about the gag comedies, music videos, commercials, plus anthology pieces. I think that's kind of like the best way to demonstrate anime's versatility to people in the shortest amount of time. I'm going to be sitting in with Charles Dunbar, the anime anthropologist from Study of Anime, on Fandom Convergence and a Critical Look at the Modern Otaku, which is all about how anime cons are kind of like general nerd everything now, because that's how fans work now. And I am bringing back anime's craziest deaths, because this year has surprisingly given me a whole lot of new titles. I've got at least 15, and I'm in the process of replacing out some of the previous titles clips with different clips from the same shows. So I will also be at Otakon along with Mike, so check it out.
Yeah, I predict that once again, Anime's Craziest Deaths will be one of the most popular events of the entire con.
Yep, I did quite well last year, so I'll try not to disappoint.
Cool. Yeah, I can't wait. Like we said before, Anne and crew will be in full effect. Myself, Bamboo, Christopher McDonald, Justin will be there. So you can hang out with all of us, sort of.
Where's the live and cast for that?
I don't know. I didn't get a confirmation on whether or not that was happening, and I don't think it's on the schedule. So I don't think it's happening.
Well, there's not really a schedule yet. They've approved a slate of fan panels. I'd try reaching out again. You can probably wiggle in somewhere.
Sure. Don't doubt that. But even if they don't give us panel space, I'll just commandeer a bar.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. That would be maybe a little more fun, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just take over a bar somewhere and we'll record.
Possibly completely unairable, but you know.
Oh no, no. Oh no. The more unairable, the more arable.
Then I guess I'll have to show up for this.
You better, yeah. That'd be
damn straight.
Be a lot of fun. I would love to just go for hours and just bring in all of our friends. That would be fantastic. We'll see how it goes. Otakon, I think, is going to be nutty this year. We'll see. Mm-hmm. All right. Tangy Tangerine 2 asks, with Galaxy Express 99's DVD release on hold due to low sales, do you think that's a sign of low interest in classic titles, interest in certain titles, or maybe do how do companies handle the titles?
I think that particular case is an example of everyone knows that S'more fucked that release all up.
Yeah.
And stayed away, because it sounds to me like S'more planned that thing to only sell maybe, you know, 800 to 1200 units, which is somewhat reasonable for something like that. But no, it didn't even get anywhere close to that, because it was all burned in subtitles, and they had the entire like first quarter of the series on two or three discs.
I talked to that guy, and he didn't know, like, the guy that runs that company is very old school, and
yeah, he didn't know what the hell he was talking about technically.
Not only did he not know what he was talking about technically, he also had no idea how to do this stuff on the cheap the way Discotech does.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I was telling him, like, are you going to redo these subtitles? He's like, that is so expensive. There's no way I'd ever be able to make a profit. I'm like, okay.
No, you could hire a guy who could do that for pretty damn cheap. I mean, you know, you and me, Justin, we know several.
We can buy already done fan subscripts.
Yeah, I mean, hasn't Toei already put up 3.9, you know, subtitled in some effect? They could use that as the starting point and clean up those and edit that.
This is a guy who does not understand that you can't, like, just automatically, you know, according to this guy, it was just like, oh, well, you'd have to hire someone to go through every single script and manually redo every subtitle. It's just like, no, you don't. You really, no. That's not how it works.
Okay, I want to close with this one. Nocturne123 asks, who would win, Giant Grimace or Cybernetic War Giraffe?
Grimace will fuck that giraffe up.
See, that's my take on that.
That's my tip. I mean, I think we may have a unanimous one, because I don't even know who the hell this cybernetic war giraffe is, but we're talking about Grimace, right? He's got milkshakes. Fuck the other guy.
Giraffe's got that long neck, you know, exposed. Like, Grimace is stocky. He'll get in there.
Justin's like, scrapper. I hate you. Hey, hate you also.
Yeah, Justin is completely nonplussed.
I don't know. I don't care.
All right, so that wraps us. Once again, it's a fucking pleasure having you guys on. Mike and Daryl, thank you so much for showing up. And
we'll do it all again in the fall, maybe around Thanksgiving time. Oh, I'm sorry.
Or maybe around Otakon or Anime Expo.
I meant to say Apesgiving.
Yeah, well, sure, perhaps. but anyway, we will we'll see y'all next time. Thanks for showing up.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Daryl and Mike for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We would really appreciate it, and we will see you all next week.